Okay, so the way we're going to do this share is going to give a humorous Gemara, Agadato, etc. From nearly every Masechta. I didn't manage to find for every single one. We'll see as we go. We'll see. If anyone wants to leave now, they can go. Also, as we go through, I will give a 20-second, just so we also add, it's all Torah, it's all humorous Torah, but we'll also add a 20-second little just intro to each Masechta before we do it, just so we've done that as well. But we will go through and give our Agadot as we go through, providing we have time. If people have suggestions, things that they remember, more than welcome to take suggestions for as long as time is available. So we're going to start with Masechet Brachos. Brachos, again, just the introduction to Masechet, really two sections. First five Prokim deal with Tfilos, Shema, and Shemone Esrei. The last four Prokim, Prokim 6 to 9, deal with Brachos, Brachos on food, Brachos on Mazon, etc. So Daf Nun Hei Amun Beis. It says that one day Rabba wasn't well. The first day he didn't want to tell people. Second day he tells his Talmidim, "You should please can you announce in the Beis Medrash that I'm not well." Why? And now you need to get your thumbs up for this. It says, "The people who like me, they're going to daven for me. And the people who don't like me, they're going to be happy that I'm not well." And it says in Mishlei, you shouldn't be happy because when your enemy falls, because Hashem might listen to him. So they're going to be happy that I'm not well. Then Hashem's going to listen to them. Hashem's going to listen to me, and I'm going to get better. So therefore, you should announce it, because that's a good way to get better. And that is indeed what happened. So that is one in Brachos. Anyone got any others in Brachos to add? Okay, we'll keep going. I actually want to jump to Seder Noshim and then come back to Seder Moed. Okay, so Seder Noshim, first Masechet in Seder Noshim is Yivamas, which talks about Yibum, Chalitza, different forms of marriage, kind of quasi-marriage, marriage to Katan, Cheresh, etc., as well as Agunas. So there, especially in the middle, there's a lot of discussions about, a lot of Agadotas about marriage. And it says that Rav's wife would always cook the opposite of what he wanted. Guys are already smiling. Rav's wife would always cook the opposite of what he wanted. So he would ask for like lentils and she'd cook something else. And then he'd ask something else, she'd cook him lentils. So, however, so what Rav's son called Chia did was he would tell, when he would ask his father, "What do you want?" And he would say, "Oh, I want lentils." So he would go and tell his mother, "Oh, Dad wants the other thing." And then she would cook him lentils. So after a bit, like Rav says to Chia, "You know, like your mom's, like she's got much better at like, I'll do what I want." And then he's like, "No, it was me the whole time." And then he says, like, "You know what, you can actually learn stuff from your kids." There's like this Persian phrase he uses, that you can really learn stuff from your kids, because I really should have thought of that. There's one from Yevamos, Daf Samach Gimel, Amud Aleph. Okay, moving on to Ksubas. Ksubas, by and large, talks about the literal Ksuba, the payment of the Ksuba in the case of divorce or death, but also other obligations between, mutual obligations between husband and wife in marriage. However, in Daf Ayin Zayin Amud Beis, it says that the Malach HaMavis comes to Rabbi Yeshua and says, "You are about to die." So he says, "Okay, but first, can you please show me my place in Olam Haba?" So he goes, "Okay, I'll go up and show you." So he takes him up, and he takes him up to Shemaim, and he shows him his place in Olam Haba. And as he's showing, Rabbi Yeshua jumps in and makes a shvua that he's not going to leave. So the Malach HaMavis then says, "Yeah, but you've got to leave." And he's like, "No, I made a shvua." So Hashem then says, Hashem says, "Yeah, he's made a shvua, like he's not leaving," and he stayed. He managed to outsmart the Malach HaMavis. Okay, that is the one from Ksubas. Again, any point people have things they want to suggest, things they remember, feel free. Okay, Masechet Nedarim, this is one of my favorites. Masechet Nedarim talks about making Nedarim to make certain things also. The first nine prokhim talk about general Nedarim, the last two talk about Nedarim specifically of wife, the daughter, and the ability of the husband slash father to annul them. On Daf Samach Vav on base, it says that there was a certain person from Bavel who moved to Eretz Yisrael, and there were certain communication problems. Namely, his wife didn't really understand the nuances of the Aramaic he was speaking. So one day he asked for two lentils, which was like a phrase for like a bit of food. So she cooked him two lentils. The next time he used a phrase like, "Can you cook me," like he wanted to go the other way, it's like, "Can you cook me loads?" And she cooked him like a ridiculous amount. Then he asked him for like two watermelons, which is butsini, and she brought him two candles, because butsini means candles as well. But then he ended up getting watermelons, and this is the best part. He says, "Go and break the watermelons on the bava." Bava means, we know from Bava Metzia, Bava Basa, bava means a gate. However, outside was standing Bava Ben Buta, the Amora, and she took the watermelons and smashed them on his head. However, the nice part of the story is, Bava Ben Buta asked, like, "Why do you do that?" And she said, "Oh, my husband asked me to." So he goes, "Okay, you deserve, because you listened to like what your husband said, you deserve to have two sons like Bava ben Buta, and he was totally cool with it, which is a nice ending to the story. Okay. In Nozir, this is like one of these, in the middle of a halachic discussion, just sometimes you have these phrases thrown in, that, just going back, Nozir just basically talks, is somewhat similar to Nedarim, talks about a lot about how to make the neder to be a nazir, and then also talks about the isurim, the different isurim there are on a nazir, as well as quite a significant portion that is dedicated to Tuman Tara. On Daf Nun Base, this is like one of these, this is one of those times where it's just thrown in, it's not an agada by itself, it's just in the middle of a halachic discussion, this is just thrown in. Rabbi Shimon, there's a discussion about certain things, is it Tomei or not? And Rabbi Shimon just says, Rabbi Akiva said it was Tomei until he died, but I don't know if he retracted since then. Just like to say, okay. Not sure what the chances are that he did retract, but okay. Okay, pardon? Oh, very good. Could be. Then in Sota, first six brokim of Sota talk about the Sota. The last three are miscellaneous. Talk about different, various different halachos, aglarufa, war, etc. The last gemara in Sota is the following. The Mishnah lists many tanoim who they their specific traits when they passed away, that this certain trait was lost from the world to a certain extent. And it says that when Rebbe died, there was no more anova. And Rav Yosef said, that's not true, because there's still me. So, there we go. That is the final Gemara in Sota. Okay, then Gittin talks about divorce. The one we're going to quote here is actually a humorous and a very interesting one of these very funny halachic discussions. Discussions are following. The way Gittin works, the only way to divorce in Judaism is by giving a get. Is by giving a document which of divorce. And there is a discussion in the Gemara following. Let's suppose a man gives his wife a get, but very important, it has to, there are many dinim about the, many dinim about the shtar, many dinim about giving over the get, many dinim also making sure that the get, kind of there's a finality to the get as well. But one of the questions that asks is the following. Let's suppose a man gives his wife a get, but says, the paper in between the words is mine. So is that called giving a get or not? Obviously a very practical question, and obviously comes up the whole time. But that's just one of these interesting halachic questions. And then this is one of my favorite ones, just to finish off Seif Noshim in Kiddushin. Kiddushin, first perek talks about kinyonim. Middle two perek talks about how to do marriage. Last perek talks about kind of lineage and marriage, mamzerus, etc. In Kiddushin, there is a discussion in the last perek about different people who are allowed to marry, aren't allowed to marry, different marriages that are legitimate, not legitimate. So it says that Rabbi Yehuda said that a certain number of marriages had a certain psak, which meant a certain number of marriages are illegitimate. So then, like, these marriages had to separate. And it says, like, the people came after him. It says they were, like, literally holding stones, like, running after him. So they're, like, they reach, like, the river. It's, like, very dramatic. They reach, like, a river. And they're holding the stones. And he's, like, don't throw them. And they're, like, why? And he goes, if you attack me, I'm going to paskin like Shmuel, who's even more machmir, and I'm going to make even more marriages. Not. And it's just like the rabbinic version of like a standoff. And they just decide, no, they chuck them in the river. And he got off, and he didn't paskin the chumrah. Okay, thus concludes Seidon Hashim. Anyone got any to add? Do people remember anything? Okay, we'll go back now to Seidon Moed, and then we'll move on to Nesikin. So I started with Noshim because I had on every Masechet Noshim. Moed is one Masechet I didn't manage to find, so I'd very much appreciate if someone can give us a good one from Beitzah. But we'll start with Shabbos. The Gemara, first of all, Masechet Shabbos talks about primarily talks about Meleches Shabbos. It doesn't talk about kind of Kiddush so much, Kiddush, Havdalah, etc. Primarily talks about Meleches Shabbos, primarily in fact about carrying, like there's about six prokim that talk uniquely about carrying, first, fifth, sixth, like many prokim talk about carrying. But in Shabbos stuff, Kuf Nun Gimel Amud Aleph, there is a statement brought into the Beis Medrash of Rav, where Rav says that, quoting the name of Rav, that Rav says you can tell if someone's an Olam Haba by going to their hesped. Namely, if in their hesped, like you see that the whole community is crying and the person giving the hesped is crying, you could tell he's a ben Olam Haba. At which point Abaye turns to Rav and he's like, okay, so what about you? The whole Pumbedisa hates you. So Rava then goes, yeah, but I've got you and one other Talmud who like me, so I'm sure I'll be fine. Now the next one I have two different ones. The reason is because my favourite one is actually one that I think only Rafi Cohen and maybe some other English people will get. You need to have seen a certain Monty Python sketch to get it. I have to say it, though, because I feel machoev to say it. There is a certain Monty Python sketch which is called The Four Yorkshiremen. Actually, it's taken from another group. Okay, very good. Good crowd, okay. So, yeah. The Four Yorkshiremen... Cass, there's this place called England, and there's this
Please don't turn the 5-10.
Yeah, sorry. Turn left, like, just keep going. There's a Monty Python sketch called The Four Yorkshiremen, which basically are four people from Yorkshire to an area of England, discussing their childhood, saying, like, I could do the accent as well, but, like, basically saying how our childhood is, like, terrible. Like, back in our day, we used to have to live in a puddle, whatever. Like, it's very, very funny. So, and they basically keep going, keep progressively trying to outdo each other by how bad their life was. Like, it gets the last one, which was ridiculous. Like, we had to
wake us up half an hour before we went to bed, send us down coal mine. Kill us and dance on our grave if we were lucky.
Yeah, it's like, it gets worse and worse, like how hard we used to work 18 hours a day, and then these guys, like, we used to work 25 hours a day, get home half an hour before we went to sleep, half an hour after we went to sleep. Dad would kill us every night and wake us up in the morning. Like, whatever, it's just like, absolutely ridiculous. So, a slightly less dramatic version, but a somewhat similar thing happens in Erevin, is where two Amoraim are discussing how it would be in their base medrash. So one person said, our base medrash is really crowded. We used to have four people sitting in every amma. So the one person responds to him, yeah, but in our base medrash, you'd have six people in every amma. So if you read that with a Yorkshire accent, it sounds like Monty Python. For those who don't know Monty Python, I'll give another one. Also Nandala Dumanalev, which is funny because it's using a phrase where a lot of people know, which is Shmuel says to Rabbi Huda, this world is like a party, grab and eat, grab and drink, because today it's all gone. Now what does that sound like? Eat, drink, and be merry, because tomorrow we die. And by the way, just interestingly, where does it actually come from? Does anyone know? It actually comes from Yeshaya. People generally tend to assume it's some Greek thing. It actually comes from Yeshaya. Okay, moving on to Psachim. There's really two sections of Pesachim. The first five and the tenth parak talk about the mitzvahs of Pesach, like that we still have today: matzah, morah, seder, etc. Middle four parakim talk about Korban Pesach. Right at the beginning of Pesachim, though, Dav Gimel on base, it's talking about the importance of using a lashon nakiyah, of speaking nicely, namely, rather the Torah will sometimes say, rather than saying this is impure, rather than saying it's tameh, it will say it's not tar, etc. So there was an amora who tried this, but it didn't really work out for him. Came from a certain village to another place, and they asked him, how's the wheat doing in your place? And the wheat was doing bad, but he didn't want to say it was doing badly, so he said, oh, the barley's good. And he's looking like, you want to go tell that to the horses, because barley's like animal food. So he's like, why are you telling us that? Then the question is, oh, so what should he have said?
Not as good as the barley.
Pardon? The wheat was good last year. Oh, that's what you should have said. But they didn't like that. Moving on to Yuma. This is also a great one. This is important for people going into Rabbonis. It's important to kind of watch your words and watch how people understand what you say. Do you know what it's going to be?
I think so.
Okay. So, the first seven brachim of Yuma talk about the Yom Kippur, the Avodah of Yom Kippur in the Beis Mikdash. In the last parak, it talks about the mitzvahs we have today, fasting, etc. And it says that the discussion in the Gemara is about what is what is forbidden on Yom Kippur, called the Chamisha Inuyim, namely things that afflict you. Namely, it's not the same as Achila. There are certain things that when you're not, let's say, another fast, you're not allowed to do Achila, because doing them does not limit your affliction, therefore they're not asking Yom Kippur. Namely, the Gemara says that vinegar, God discusses vinegar, namely vinegar normally would be forbidden to drink because you're not allowed to drink. But here on Yom Kippur, the important point is it called reducing your affliction to drink vinegar? And Rav Gidl, one of the Maraim, says, we paskin that vinegar, like having a bit of vinegar, that doesn't like satisfy you at all, that doesn't reduce your inuy at all, therefore you're not chayav for drinking vinegar. So, now he intended, like, if you had a bit of vinegar, like, then you're not over in the same way that if you had any other fast, etc. So next year he comes into shul and everyone's just sitting there. They've got like, they've taken vinegar, which is not, again, he's talking about vinegar, which is very harsh, which doesn't satisfy you. They've just diluted it loads. They're sitting around there with tons of it and they're just all drinking it. And he's like, what are you doing? He's like, you said vinegar's fine. So important for rabbis to know how their words are taken. and they should be understood properly.
Yeah.
Okay, very good.
That's fine. The one with the takeaway.
All right. Sukkah is not as good, but it's just kind of like an interest. This is almost like a rabbinic insult, where it says that Rabbi Zera said they wouldn't. Sukkah. There's really three sections of Sukkah. First Perek is about the mitzvah of sitting in a sukkah. First two parak about mitzvah sitting in a sukkah. Third parak is about the Arba Minim. Last two about sukkah in the Beis HaMikdash. So in that context, in the last parak, Rabbi Zera says that they wouldn't blow shofar on Shabbos. Namely, they would have shofar blown on Erev Yom Tov and Erev Shabbos, etc. Rabbi Zera said they wouldn't blow the shofar on Shabbos. And Rabba says, who is this person, shelo chosh lekimche, which in modern language would be, he doesn't have any quality control. Namely, like, why are you just saying stuff like that? It's totally not true. And it's just like a pretty harsh insult. Again, we don't feel it as a harsh insult because it's in Aramaic, but actually what he's basically saying is like, seriously, quality control. Like, what? Like that again, he's saying like, you make dough without checking what goes into it. Basically, you just say whatever and it doesn't, like, quality control would be the best way of describing it. Pretty harsh insult. Yes?
I think there's a better one. I don't remember exactly where it is, but it's... two rabbanim are arguing over whether or not you have a sukkah on a boat. And what's it called? One of them builds his sukkah on
very
a boat.
Very good, yeah, that's better. Very good. Even better, Siegel. Yeah, okay, anyway, yeah.
What's the story? I forget.
What's it called? And so the one says you are allowed to build a sukkah on the boat, and it actually gets blown off. And the one who descended comes up to him and he's like, hey. Where's your sukkah?
Okay, yeah, that is better. Now, Bates, I didn't manage to find one, I apologize. Rosh Hashanah. The two sections of Rosh Hashanah, the first section talks about Rosh Chodesh, first two prokim. Next, third parak talks about Shofar, fourth parak talks about the Tefillos of Rosh Hashanah. However, at the beginning of the fourth parak, it talks about the fact that we don't blow Shofar on Shabbos. However, in the Beis HaMikdash, they used to blow Shofar on Shabbos. Discussing after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, they were discussing what should we do. So they came to Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, who's the leader, then asked, should we blow Shofar or not? And he's like, you know what? Let's blow shofar, and afterwards we'll talk about it. So they blow shofar, and then afterwards they come to, okay, but what's the halacha? And he's like, okay, we've already done it. Like, this is what we're doing. This is now the precedent, and we're just going to keep it. So a good way of dispute resolution. Just do it. In Tarnis, this is also one of my favorites, like one of these ironic or sarcastic comments. Tarnis, the... three different sections. The first two prokem talk about fasts, tefillos, and fasts to do with rain. The third section talks about the third section of Tanis talks about Tanios for other reasons, and the fourth section of Tanis talks about different tefillos that were in the Beis HaMikdash, the Ma'amados, etc. However, when discussing the fast for other things except for rain, they come and tell Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara says that so once they came and told Rabbi Yehuda that some locusts had come. What should we do? And then as they're telling him that, they get some, like, a new report that actually they haven't caused any destruction yet. Rabbi Yehuda goes, oh, that's great. They brought their own food with them. Amazing. Basically saying, like, what do you think is going to happen? Like, the locusts are just going to come and, like, oh, they brought food with them. They're not going to destroy anything. Like, okay, they're obviously going to eat it at some point, which I thought was very nice. Then in Megillah, Rafi Cohen mentioned this one at his Siyam on Megillah a few days ago, which, by the way, I'll now mention, was actually the inspiration for this. Rafi made a Siyam on Megillah and quoted about five different humorous Gemaras from the Masechta, and I realized that would be a great thing to do, to go through a list of humorous Gemaras from the Masechta, so thank you to Rafi. But this is a very, very famous one that I'll say no Abramowitz's Perush on this Gemara as well. The famous Gemara is that Rava, talking about the Chiyuv to drink on Purim, Rava and Rav Zera have Purim seder together, and he gets drunk and kills him. Then Davin brings him back to life, and the next year he asks him, like, do you want to come for seder again? And he's like, no, I'm not relying on a miracle. However, everyone quotes that, this is not Abramowitz's Perush, everyone quotes that Gemara as saying that, like, as a reason, like, you see, you shouldn't get drunk on Purim because it can kill people. And now Abramowitz said it's exactly the opposite. The phrase the Gemara uses is, Kom Rav of a Shochte l'Rabbi Zera. So why does he use the phrase of Shechita rather than, like, Horge? It says that he did a kosher Shechita, and if you were sober enough to do a kosher Shechita, you hadn't drunk enough. That's the lesson of the Gemara, according to Noah Abramowitz, and I think no one else. I think we all know what the Gemara is. All right.
People would say that. What do you call it? Since he said, like, I don't want to rely on a miracle again, implies that he was definitely going to drink at his own seuda.
Oh, okay.
You knew that they were both drinks.
Huh? Very good. All right.
My other favorite one on Megillah was towards the end. It's talking about someone who says Shema twice is considered like it's like he's praying to two gods. So you shut him up and you rebuke him. And so someone says, someone comes on and says, well, what if you didn't have Kavanah the first time, so he was saying it again to make up for it? And the reply comes, like, are you a friend of Shemayim that you can just turn up with Kavanah whenever you like? And the one that says this, and if my chavruta doesn't have Kavanah when he's next to me, I hit him with a blacksmith's hammer until he has Kavanah.
Alright. Moed Koton. Moed Koton discusses the rules of Chol HaMoed. At the end, it also discusses through that also discusses Avelos. So the Gemara says in Kaf Ches Amud Aleph that the Malach HaMoves came to Rav Sheshes in the marketplace and said, "I want to kill you." And Rav Sheshes is like, "What am I, an animal? Like you're killing me in the marketplace? Like come to my house." It's obviously a interesting reaction to when the Malach HaMoves comes to. Alright, then another, finally, Chagiga, back to rabbinic insults. Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria and Rabbi Akiva are very famous on Daf Yud Dalet Amud Aleph, where Rabbi Akiva says a certain thing, and Rabbi Elazar in Agata, we're talking about Agadata, and Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria, very famous, he said, "Akiva, malacha etzla Agada, Akiva, what are you doing, Agadata? Go back to Arlos and Nagoyim, basically stick to kind of the cold halacha, you're not an Agada person." Pardon?
My customer.
You got
to
use this one. Ever.
Pardon?
You remember this one? Domin, I did that. It was like, "Hey, my bed," or "Bubba Manoff," maybe "Hey, Manoff," something around there. Basically, it was talking about how it said if someone is going to get like punished if he talks extra with his wife at any moment. So then, Rabba, so then it like cuts and says, it brings like a mace from like a story. And so it says, like, Rabba one day went into Rabba's house, waited underneath his bed. And then jokes with his wife. So then Rabba gets up from the bed and says, "What are you doing?" And he's like, "Get out, this isn't appropriate."
Torah Hevelumadani, sorry.
And then Sarah's like, in that moment, like, Rabba had to, Rav had to appease his wife in order that like she'd be okay to like have relations at the time. But any other time, like, no, you're not supposed to like talk.
Right. Yeah.
Wasn't it
like that comes out in Brochas. In Brochas, there's like a number of those.
There is like Ahuya Nuka that was trying to be Doresh in Ma'aseh Merkava, but the Chashmal got struck down by lightning, and these guys got burnt up by fire. So, no, my Chashmal.
That's good. All right, on to Nazikin. First of all, Baba Kama, this is probably the funniest.
Pava Baraba?
Is this Rabbi Yaakov?
Pava Baraba?
No, this is one of the funniest.
Is this Rabbi Yaakov?
No, this is the funniest halachic question I think there is in the entire Shas, which is talking about the following. First of all, Baba Kama has two sections. The first six Prokim talk about. Pardon? No. Funnier, even funnier. I have that as well, but even funnier. There are two sections to overcome. The first six programs talk about damages done by your property. The last four talk about damages done by you. But on Dav Nun Hey Amun Aleph, there is a discussion about Kilayim, namely the number of forms of Kilayim, Shatnez, Kilay Hakarim, Kilay Zeraim, etc. Another form is plowing a field with two animals together, namely a classic example would be a cow and a goat or something, plowing a cow and a donkey. And the Gemara discusses the different animals that are forbidden to plow together. So it says, what about plowing with an animal that is not a land animal? And it says, what if you plowed your animal with a goat and a fish? Now, I struggle to work out the mitzvahs. Where exactly that field is, what fish that is, and how they work together. By the way, the discussion about is there kilayim with a goat and a fish, that probably is the best halakha discussion, though there's a number of good ones. We're going to move quickly on to Bava Metzia. I don't remember how we passed it.
It says, it's like, someone says, like, whoever it was, like, Nezik Shah, Omer Nezik Shah, and then Rabbi Yaakov of Chetzi Nezik. So, like, they ask, like, why does Rabbi Yaakov pay Chetzi Nezik? What does Rabbi Yaakov do? Oh, sorry, read it, Rabbi Yaakov Omer.
Oh, right. Okay, that's funny. Then in Bava Metzia, this is another unbelievable halakhic question. In Bava Metzia, Bava Metzia is actually quite hard to define. There's lots of different sections. A major portion of Bava Metzia, about four Prokim, are about Shomrim, guardians. And one of the principles by a Shoel generally is whose borrower, who is not paying for the animal but is able to use it, one of the principles of a Shoel is that he is effectively chayav on everything except for Mesa Machamas Malacha, namely, because he intended to use it. Therefore, if it dies in the course of being used, that is called Mesa Machamas Malacha. So, there is a man who bought a cat, who borrowed a cat, and the following question was, is this considered Mesa Machamas Malacha? I assume the cat was hired to kill the mice. However, it says the mice gang up on the cat and kill it. So is that called Meisel Machos Malacha or not? Again, a brilliant case.
Rav Nosson claims that he saw a mouse facing off a cat.
In the rover, right, yes. So, okay.
The whole seventh parak, like the beginning of the seventh parak, basically.
What?
Like there's so much Agadah to that.
Beginning of the seventh parak, I'm going to say it right.
Yeah,
right,
like with the fat, yes. Rabbi Yochanan, and the whole herd under them.
Okay, this is another brilliant one. This I think is almost a little bit like jokes they make about yeshiva guys today, and like the sort of jokes Hasidim would make about Misnagdim, etc. There's a story in Bava Basra, Daf Nun Tes Amud Beis, that one of the Amoraim was attacked by lions. And he davened to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please help me. So what happened was some pieces of meat fell from Shemayim, and the lions were distracted by the meat, and they went, instead of the person, they went for the meat. However, there were two pieces of meat, and the animals only took one of them. So the Amora took the other piece of meat, walks into the base of Medrash, like, is this kosher or not? And it's like the sort of thing like the Hasidim would say, like, this is a nes min hashamayim, etc. And all you're worried about, like, is can I eat it and stuff? Just to this link back to another. This is now again not a Gemara joke, but a joke that they say that like, the difference between Hasidim and Misnagdim. There's a Gemara in Sukkah Daf Kaf Ches which says that Hillel had 80 talmidim, the youngest of them was Yonason ben Uziel, and when Yonason ben Uziel would study, birds in Shemayim would burn the birds that flew above him. So the Hasidim would sit there like, unbelievable, the Madrega of the Amorayim, the Madrega of Hillel, etc. And like, and the Misnagdim sitting there, is he chayav for Eish? Like, hey, like, okay. Alright. Then, this is, again, the, tends to be the ones I found in Ezekiel are all quite halachic. The one I gave from Bava Basra at Daf Nun Testament Base, actually Sanhedrin Nun Testament Base. Apologies. The one from Rav Basra was the following. Sorry, my bad, I missed that. Back to Rav Basra. So again, the one about the lion, that was Sanhedrin. The one about Rav Basra is a really interesting one. It says that one Amora was visiting, I don't remember the names now, one Amora was visiting a new place. So let's say Amora A. So Amora B tells Amora C, oh, look who's coming to our place. So Amora C says, okay, but like, let's test him, let's see if he's really that good. So go and test him when he comes. So when he gets there, like, he wants to, when Amora A reaches there, they want to test him if he is a Talmud Chacham. So the way they test him is by asking him this quite interesting halachic question. There is a rule that for something to be makabel tumah, it needs to be a kli, it needs to be a vessel. Namely, if you have a something that's not functional as a vessel, it's not makabel tumah as a kli. So the question is the following. What happens if a basket, which is makabel tumah, is eaten by an elephant, and the elephant then excretes it out? Is it still makabel tumah? I don't think they asked you that in your yeshiva bechina to get into Sefer Talmud Chacham. It hasn't really caught on as a question, but that was the question asked. That used to be, I suppose, yeshiva bechinas to see if you're a Talmud Chacham. Things have changed since then. Okay, in Makos, there were three.
Sanhedrin.
No, I did Sanhedrin. Okay.
Matar Sharetz. The whole svar is how you couldn't be a dialist, you could be Matar Sharetz, and give a whole Kalvin Homer wide tower.
Okay, but I mean, that I happen to think is not humorous, that I think is a whole. Thing. Well, okay. All right. Then Makos. There's three sections of Makos. First perek talks about Adam's Omen. Second talks about Golos. Third talks about Makos getting lashes. And in discussing lashes, the Mishnah says how can you do one action and get eight sets of Malkos. This is like super Rosh. I'm just going to try and remember it. You plow a field with Kalai Behema. On Shabbos, Shmita. Yom Tov, Shemitah, you're a Kohen and a Nazir, and it's Tomei.
You made a
sure not to?
In a cemetery.
I said a Kohen and a Nazir. So that's how you can do eight lavim at once. And then the best one is, a ninth one is suggested, like, someone said, no, you could do nine as well, because you can do it whilst wearing kilayim. And they go, no, that's ridiculous. To be fair, it's not really true, because the ninth one is a bit different. He says Eino min ha'inyan, namely that one's a little bit different because it's not to do with the actual act of plowing, but still it's kind of funny, like, no, now you're just being that's ridiculous. Nine, that was just silly.
Yeah, and the next one where they constantly ask, like, they ask like five more, like the dumbest things. Like, and was like, there was the dumbest mnemonic. It was like Rabbi Yossi, he has like the letter Samach in his name, like, therefore.
Yeah, you love the Samach, the mnemonic that is the mnemonic. Yeah, alright.
So there's a Tosos, the Nivalmus, there's a case of, I was doing Chalitza with two shoes, of like, if you rip the bottom one without taking the top one off, is it has Chalitza or not? And the Gemara's like, that's ridiculous, why would you ever ask that? And Tosos says, like, okay, the Gemara asked in the Chulim about tying two wombs together.
Oh, wait, why are you wearing that? One sec.
Like, he has much more ridiculous questions than tying two shoes.
One sec. All right. So, Shavuos, Masechet Shavuos. There are three sections of Shavuos. First two prokim till really with Tumah Tara. Middle three, then three through to five are about Shavuos you're not allowed to make. Parakim 6 through to 8 about Shavuos you're obligated to make in the court of law, the Shavuos you need to make. So in discussing on Daf Lama Rav Beis, it talks about some general rules about court cases and very important rules about how a court case is run, etc. And it says one of the things the Dayan needs to make sure he does is that he doesn't show favoritism to one over the other, not just in the psak, but in the proceedings of court, can't seem to be favoring one of them because that will totally throw off the other person if they think the other one is being shown favoritism to. So for example, it says you shouldn't stand up for one rather than the other because the other is going to think, oh, this is going to kind of fluster the other person. So it says that Rav Huna was running a court case for, and there was one woman there, was a very choshev woman who he wanted to stand up for. But he wasn't sure what to do, because on the one hand, he wants to stand up for her because she is deserving of kovet. On the other hand, he shouldn't stand up because it's going to fluster the other person. She said to one of his talmidim, when she walks in, like, bring a bird in as well and, like, release it in the court. And I'll just, like, jump up in fright. So then I've done both, because I've stood up for her out of kovet, but the other guy doesn't get flustered. So that was very clever. And Avodah Zorah, I didn't manage to get on, this is the last one I didn't manage to get on for Horios. Avodah Zorah, there is a, Avodah Zorah is actually a lot, but my favorite one is discussing which criminals are frumah. The story is as follows. The Gemara gives two examples of robbers who are tricked. First, there are robbers who come up to Talmidim Rav Akiva, is in Eretz Yisrael, and they say, where are you guys going to? And they say, oh, we're going to Akko. So the robbers kind of follow with them, but they were just joking, they were just bluffing. They actually stop at Kziv. The robbers were hoping they would go further and were able to take their stuff. They were kind of first being friendly with them and they wanted to take it, but they actually tricked them. They told them we're going a long way and they didn't. So as they like leave, like the robbers then ask them, like, who's your Rebbe? And they say, like, Rabbi Akiva, and the robbers say, like, oh, Rabbi Akiva should be blessed, whatever, because he's so clever. Then the same thing happens in Bovel. The Talmidim of Rav Yehuda in Bovel are going on the way, and they're told, and again, robbers come and ask them, where are you going? And they tell them they're going one place, but they're not actually going there, and they stop earlier. So the robbers say, oh, you guys, you're Talmidim Rav Yehuda, who's like a trickster, like, oh, you, like, basically, like, ripping into Rabbi Yehuda for having Talmidim like this. And the Gemara says, like, look how much better the robbers in Eretz Yisrael are compared to Bovel. That's like a really modern version of, like, reasons to live in Israel. Like the buses say this, and, like, the robbers are so frum. Like, even the robbers say Shabbat Shalom. Like, it's just like, all right. So, Horace didn't manage to find one. When we get into Seder Kochim, here, I only managed to find it in Fumas Hechtes. I didn't manage to find it in Zvachim. Menachos, though, there are a few. And Cholin, there are loads. Menachos, there's an interesting halachic question. Menachos generally talks about Menachos, however, in the fourth parak is a lot of miscellaneous and very important rules of Stam, Sefer Torah, Tefillin, and Mezuzahs. Comes up in the, and also Tzitzis. Also comes up there. But there is a question asked in the Gemara about, on Daf Lamed Zayin Amal Aleph, if a man has two heads, which head does he put tefillin on? Again, I think people are familiar with the question of if you're ambidextrous, if you can use both arms, which is your weaker arm, etc. But here it is, if you have two heads, which head do you put tefillin on? Moving on to Chulin, there really are a lot. My favorite, I want to give two in Chulin. The first one is, a brilliant halachic question, which people can try or not try this out. It's discussing the rules of Shechita, and I ask the following question. If someone throws a knife into a wall, and it bounces back and does Shechita, is that a kosher Shechita or not? You can try this or not. I want to give one which Ari Schiff mentioned, which is actually a very important one. We haven't yet, and I'll come back, I'll talk a little bit at the end about kind of some of the messages behind this idea of the being human in the Gemara. But this one is a very important one, which is a discussion on Daf Ayin Amad Aleph, talking about a Bechor. And the questions are following. Let's suppose there is a fetus in a cow, and the cow has, this is going to be the firstborn for a cow. A weasel takes the fetus from inside one cow and deposits it inside the fetus of another cow. Then the second cow gives birth. Is a child that comes after that fetus considered a Bechor or not? Now, throughout, like, that's quoted again, as Ari Shiv said, that's quoted, like, Roshonim is like the example of crazy questions that Gemara asks. However, why is it not so crazy anymore?
For cloning.
Before cloning. IVF, surrogate mothers, etc. This is now the Gemara really has actually discussed this, which is important to note. it's important to note that sometimes the Gemara, and this is some of the things the Rishonim have said, Rishonim and Acharonim answered, that some, why we have some of these funny Gemaras. Sometimes they are dealing with theoretical scenarios which end up, would either help you understand the din more in a theoretical plane, or actually will come up. Just to give another example, this Rav Shechter said this example, there's a famous Gemara in Chulin which talks about an animal which is half earth, half animal, and various halachas of it. And people have always discussed it, does this really exist, etc. And Rav Shechter said that someone, he was speaking to a scientist who goes to a Daf Yomi Shir, a brilliant scientist, and like when he got to that Gemara, he said, I'm going to design that. Like, I'm going to create that through like genetic modifications. It's really, like, I want to make the thing that is half off or half animal. Again, it's really not unfeasible. What do I know about? I'm not really that holy in science and genetics, etc. But it doesn't seem that it would be unfeasible to think of, again, somewhat outlandish animals. Again, an interesting take on why we have on some of these interesting Gemaras. Bechoros. This is a great story in Bechoros. Bechoros talks about three types of Bechor. There's a Bechor Adam, is redeemed, a Bechor of a Behema Temea, which is redeemed for a sheep, that comes up at the beginning of Matzia, and a Bechor Behema Tara, which offers a carbon, or sucks Maisa Behema. In Bechoros, Daf Ches Amud Beis, this is the last one, don't worry, this is the last one, and we'll finish. Rabbi Yeshua ben Hanania gets into a debate with the ruler at the time, and says he's cleverer than the Greeks. So he goes on a whole mission showing that he's, that the king sends him on like a mission to prove he's cleverer than the Greeks. So there's a number of parts of the story, but one of them is he goes to Greece and he goes to a butcher and he says to the butcher, how much does a head cost? And the butcher says, oh, like half a zuz. So he says, okay, and gives him half a zuz. He's like, can I have your head, please? And the guy gives him like a head of an animal. And the butcher, he's like, no, I didn't say the head of an animal. I said like a head, like meaning your head. And he goes into like a whole load of other stories like this, trying to like outsmart the Greeks. It's a whole long story. That's a much longer story. There's some very long goddesses there in Bechoros, Daf Chesamud Beis. The remaining parts of Kochim, Erechin, Tmura, Krisus, Me'ila, Tomid, and then in Noshim Nida, I didn't manage to find. Anyone has anything? First of all, has anyone learned anything of Erechin, Tmura, Krisus, Me'ila, Tamid, Nida? There's not good ones. If I had said like Megillah, Tanis, Chagiga, I think we'd be fine. But I'm not doing myself any favours by not being able to find on those. If anyone finds those or can think of others, just 30 seconds before we finish, just to talk a little bit about the significance of this. First of all, one thing that should be immediately clear is that we tend to think of the Gemara as a book of laws. Beyond that, we would say it's, as well as a book of laws, a book of messages. What's very important is that the Gemara also includes a large amount going broader than just humour, but about the way and the way Amoraim lived, their personalities, their characters, etc. Which I think has a number of messages to it. One is, maybe almost a historical point, I think it's a reason why, one of the reasons why, or maybe a contributing factor to the fact that the Gemara is the central text of Judaism, etc., is because it's a very, very alive text. As in, we know that it's got the back and forth and debates, discussion, etc. But you really, when you're looking for it, you really get a sense of who these people are. It's not just a list of laws. It's not just cold. The text really is very much alive, which makes it very, very invigorating, very exciting to learn. By the way, this style again of humor and like interesting comments carries on all the way through Gaonim, Rishonim, Achronim, all sorts of like interesting plays and words, etc. It's not a dry legal text by any means. It's very much alive. Second of all, it is also important. That's interesting to understand. This is specifically talking about understanding the personalities of Amoraim, can help you kind of again deepen your connection to it can turn something which is a text into something you can really connect to as part of the living Masorah, namely not just to connect to Rava as the person who said it says in law, but connect to Rava as a person. Once the more you take Rava off the page and he becomes a real person with a sense of humor, comments with his kind of little banter with his Talmidim, a bit of trash talking every so often, it can bring the people off the page a little bit and help you connect to the Gemara, not just as a legal book but also as part of Amasara. Good Kodesh.